time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Stacey Osborne. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Welcome to the NC press call today with incoming Executive Vice President of Regulatory Affairs, Oliver Luck. I'll turn the call over to Oliver for opening comments, and then he will take your questions.
Well, thank you, Stacey, and good afternoon to all the assembled media folks. It's a real privilege to have been selected by President Emmert and by the search committee, which was headed up by Big 12 Commissioner Bob Boolsby, to fill this position. As President Emmert has said, the next 36 to 48 months is really a seminal time period for the NCAA, and I'm honored to have been given the opportunity to work with a great team on the regulatory side and to move the mission forward for the NCAA, which I think is hugely important within American society. I see my role as building additional trust and confidence within our membership. Of course, the NCAA, like many institutions, is a membership-driven institution, and I see my role as building the trust and the confidence within our membership, well over 1,000 institutions, with the regulatory functions that the NCAA does, in fact, provide. You know, sometimes it's a very challenging business. Sometimes many of the decisions that are made, and I felt the same way as an athletic director, were complicated, were complex, were nuanced. And I think that one of the roles that I can help fill is to clearly explain the why behind many of the decisions that are made at the headquarters within the regulatory framework. I'm looking forward to working with a great group of people, some very smart, talented, and experienced people with a lot of integrity. Of course, no organization is perfect, and I'm sure there are things that we can do together as I get into the office and I'm able to have a dialogue with folks and share and learn more about the experiences that folks have and better understand a lot of the regulatory functions. I'm sure there are changes that we can make, but it's a great group of people, and I really look forward to working with those folks. One final point before we open for questions. I'm very excited about this opportunity at this particular time because of the new governance structure that will go into place next month. The autonomous group of the 65 schools, as well as the Division I Council that will set policy for all of Division I, I think is a great new structure. I think it will enable legislation to pass more easily. I think it's a better system than the somewhat wieldy system of the past. And I think that this new governance structure, and I know President Emmert has been a big supporter of it, I think will give the organization a much better opportunity to pass legislation relatively quickly, to implement it quickly, and to better serve the needs and the expectations of the very diverse membership. So with that, Stacey, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Operator, can you please explain how reporters may ask a question?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone indicating you have been placed in queue. You may remove yourself from queue at any time by pressing the pound key. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star one at this time. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from the line of Dave Morrison from ESPN Radio. Please go ahead.
Yes, Oliver. Good afternoon. You had a lot of accomplishments at West Virginia during your tenure there. Is there any one that stands out to you as being what you would call, I guess, the highlight of your career there?
Well, I would probably say that the ultimately the most important thing that we were collectively able to accomplish was to ensure a spot in one of the five principal conferences. That in a way was almost an existential challenge for the university, for the athletic program, certainly for the university being the flagship school of a relatively small state. So I think anybody who would look at it from afar would probably say that you know, joining the Big 12, receiving the opportunity to join a great conference with a lot of schools that are very much like us, land-grant institutions with a strong agricultural background. Having the chance to join that conference was probably the biggest step that we've taken the last 4.5, 5 years.
Your next question comes from the line of John Solomon from CBS Sports. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Oliver. You've been pretty candid in the past that you believe it's a constitutional right for people to use their own name, image, and likeness, and that universities should figure out a way to compensate athletes for that. Is that something in your new position you're going to be advocating for within the membership?
John, I've been fairly candid, as you mentioned, and it's probably better to say, I think I may have misspoken when I said it was a constitutional right. I'd say it's probably more of a fundamental right, because we, each of us, all to control our name, image, and likeness. I think it obviously was an important issue in the O'Bannon lawsuit. We have a decision by Judge Wilkin. I can tell you that just like in the Big 12 with my colleagues, athletic director colleagues in the Big 12, all the conferences are looking very closely at Judge Wilkin's decisions, trying to figure out how to implement that. Some decisions by some institutions have been made, as you well know, in terms of already agreeing to provide the full trust fund payments for a student athlete's name, image, and likeness. And I think we'll see more and more of that. But it's certainly something that I'll now be able to have a dialogue with NCAA legal staff, both Donald Remy, the chief legal counsel, as well as external staff, to better understand how we can continue to move that along and ultimately continue to benefit the student athletes.
Your next question comes from the line of Daniel Uthman from USA Today Sports. Please go ahead.
Oliver, in terms of serving the membership, what's at the top of your to-do list, or what's your top priority in your new job?
Well, you know, as a sitting athletic director for the last 4.5 years, as you can imagine, I've heard an earful from my colleagues and from others, you know, about potential misgivings or missteps by the NCAA. They tend to focus on the enforcement side of things. I do know that a good bit of work has been done both internally as well as externally, looking at the enforcement mechanism, looking at the systems that are in place. You know, what athletic directors and coaches want at the end of the day are clear rules, you know, an expedient process, even-handed enforcement, and a timeliness for all of that. And without getting into any specifics, I think I'll be able to spend a good bit of time with John Duncan, who heads up the enforcement. John's done a marvelous job, has an excellent reputation. Look forward to working with him and better understanding how we can continue to improve the process, listen to folks both internally as well as externally, take all those good suggestions, and really come up with an enforcement process that meets the needs and the expectations that we have with our membership.
Your next question comes from the line of Bob Cohen from Pittsburgh Tribune. Please go ahead.
Hey, Oliver, congratulations.
Thank you, Bob.
And you quoted Mark Emmert as talking about the importance of the next 36 to 48 months. If you don't mind, could you just itemize a couple of what those of the main issues of concern are?
Well, if I had to So list the handful of items, the ones that come to mind initially are the response that the NCAA as an institution, the conferences, as well as the individual campuses need to make to the variety of lawsuits that are in play. There's a number of them. I think most, if not all, of you on this call are familiar with those lawsuits, ranging from the O'Bannon suit, you know, all the way down to for example, just I think this morning or yesterday, the concussion settlement suit was not approved by, you know, by the judge. So that'll be an issue that comes up again. So I think there's a response to a lot of lawsuits that are important and will have an effect on how we operate our business. I think there are, and always have been, but will continue to be, very challenging financial implications from some of these lawsuits for a lot of campuses, if not all campuses. Even those schools that generate significant revenue, you know, are finding that they've got to, you know, watch their pocketbook in terms of figuring out how to fund, you know, fund some of the additional costs. I believe that it's important to have a focus on a lot of the Olympic sports, because because we've seen in the past, and we've even seen at my institution, as you well know, Bob, from being up the road in Pittsburgh, we've seen where in the past some institutions have been forced to drop a number of sports for financial reasons. So I think it's important to keep an eye on the health and the vitality of our Olympic sport programs. So I think those are just some of the the top of mind issues that I think are facing the association as well as all of the membership institutions.
Your next question comes from the line of Heather Dinich from ESPN.com. Please go ahead.
Oliver, what was this past season like for you being a member of the playoff selection committee?
It was an honor to be in the committee. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Great group of people. I think it was a great process. And I think given the really unprecedented level of excitement that exists right now as people anticipate now the two semifinal games and the championship game, I think it's a real tribute to the commissioners, the 10 commissioners, the management committee that put the system together. And I was really just very pleased to be a part of, even if it was a small part, of the inaugural playoff committee.
Your next question comes from the line of Reed Forgave from Fox Sports 1. Please go ahead.
Hi, Oliver. You spoke earlier about the crisis in confidence among the membership. I'm curious about the crisis of confidence among the public. There seems to be a lot of cynicism about the NCAA right now. What do you see as the number one way that not just you, but the NCAA in general can go about fixing that in the next 36 to 48 months?
I'm not sure I used the word crisis or the phrase crisis of confidence. I think I said that one of my jobs is to really build the trust and confidence within the organization with all of our constituent groups, both internal folks, ADs like myself and others, fans, supporters of college athletics. So I would dispute, the characterization that there's a crisis of confidence. I think college athletics is at an all-time high in terms of its popularity. The quality of the contests, I believe, is at an all-time high. The quality of the coaching and the medical care and the interest level that the media folks have, as well as just the average fan, and I think that's all very positive. That raises a number of issues that are important for us to look at, and I think that as an organization, what we can do to inspire even more confidence from our constituent groups is to be as clear and open and as transparent as we possibly can so that folks really do understand the why, if you will, of the decisions that are made in Indianapolis and elsewhere. It's a complicated world. It's very often a nuanced world. And I think it's incumbent upon us, like any big organization, to make sure we speak with one voice and communicate very clearly. But I think you'll find that the vast majority of folks that I interact with in my daily goings on are really very bullish about intercollegiate athletics and think the world of all the good that's being done on a daily basis with all of our athletic programs at all three levels within the NCAA.
Your next question comes from the line of Jake New from Inside Higher Education. Please go ahead.
Hey, Oliver. Some of the lower revenue colleges have expressed a little kind of discomfort with the whole idea of the Power Five autonomy. And for those that were already maybe feeling a little uncomfortable about that situation, and now they've got you coming in from the Power Five as essentially the number two, is there anything you could say that might calm anyone that's kind of nervous about that?
Well, I you have to be a member of a school in some grouping. So I'm proud of the fact that West Virginia University, again, a school from a relatively small state, is considered to be in the group of 65. And as I mentioned, that was a major accomplishment on our part. But I will say that I do have a lot of, I think, understanding of the challenges that are faced by schools that are in some of the other conferences or in other divisions. My wife's a graduate of Rice University, a great institution in Houston. And I think maybe the smallest enrollment of any D1 school in the country, at least historically that was the case. Familiar with many other schools that have somewhat similar challenges as they look at this new world. And there's nothing that's necessarily inherently better about size beyond the fact that you have some of the larger schools in the group of 65 that have very impressive profiles and a lot of athletic programs. So I think it's a balance that needs to be struck, and I'm sure that the folks at the NCAA that I'll soon be working very closely with all understand that, and I think the smaller schools will have every bit as much attention as the larger schools at the end of the day.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Murak from Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Oliver, you talked briefly about the what you consider the fundamental right on the on likenesses and images. I'm wondering if that's a conversation that you had with President Emmert at this point, and are you guys on the same page with that?
Well, Mark and I haven't had a chance to spend too much time together, but my comments about the nature of the name, image, and likeness right that a student athlete has, I think, have been out in the public sphere for a number of months. And I believe, as both an individual and as an attorney, in those fundamental rights that a student athlete has. And I'm looking forward to having a longer dialogue with Mark and many others. In fact, one could argue that this issue, the question that you raised, is really going to be decided by federal judges, be they at the district court level or perhaps at the appellate court level or perhaps even at the Supreme Court level, and what we believe may be of no consequence at the end of the day. Ultimately, I think what we want to do is make sure we do the right thing for student athletes. I think we're entering an era now where the health and the welfare and the safety of student athletes will become even more important than it's been in the past, and that's a good thing. And I think the name, image, and likeness issue will get resolved as all the other issues will relatively quickly.
Your next question comes from the line of Daniel Uckman from USA Today Sports. Please go ahead.
Oliver, in terms of the playoff process, what do you think might deserve a look for review or tweaking or changing?
In terms of the college football playoff process?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm not sure that there's anything that the playoff committee can do at this point. There'll be plenty of review sessions, with the members of the committee, and I'm sure a lot of external folks to discuss, what can be done. I thought the ten commissioners really put a marvelous process together. I thought Bill Hancock and his staff in Dallas did a great job of shepherding this first committee through the process. And I think the committee members, in terms of their intelligence and integrity and preparation and all the film that was watched and the debates that we had in the conference room, were all very productive. I think the process worked very well. I'm sure there are some things that could be improved, as with any process, but I think overall I'd have to give an A grade to the entire process that the 10 commissioners put together.
We have time for one more question.
That question comes from the line of John Wilner from San Jose Mercury. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Oliver. Did you view this at all as a calling? Are there any of the challenges going forward that really appeal to you on a fundamental, personal level?
As a former student athlete, John, as you know, two kids that went through Stanford as student athletes, a son and a daughter, one in the high profile sport, of course, one in volleyball, a lower profile sport. But I have an enormous positive belief in the value of intercollegiate athletics. I think it's a great institution that has helped hundreds of thousands of young men and women get through college. In many cases, the first time in their family that they can afford to go to college. Certainly an institution or an enterprise as big as this has some warts, and there could be every now and then a soft underbelly, if you will, for college athletics. But I believe that it's a great institution that has helped a lot of people, and I think it is something that's absolutely worth fighting for. Now, I'm not sure that's a calling. I don't hear voices very often, and I certainly didn't hear a voice that brought me to Indianapolis, for this position. But I do have a very fundamental belief in the value of intercollegiate athletics in the context of higher education, and that certainly was one of the factors that attracted me to the opportunity when Mark first presented it to me.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. You can find additional information on ncaa.org.